listening to Patty Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
Hello and welcome to episode 65 of Patty Pigskin. I'm your host, Gary Somerville. I have a very interesting guest on this week's show. His name is Connor Dropkick Mangan. He is an Irishman in Toronto, Canada, and he's trying to crack into pro football as a kicker slash punter in the NFL, maybe the CFL, perhaps even the XFL, which is going to be starting up in the new year. I'm going to chat to Connor about his journey so far up until this point, what got him into kicking in the sport of American football, and how the job search is going for life as a potential pro kicker. Really interesting. He has a documentary up on YouTube that I'm going to let him plug when he comes on. So pretty fascinating story for an Irishman trying to break into pro football. Episode 65, Paddy Pigskin. They always say congratulations. Work so hard, forgot how to vacation. They ain't never had the dedication. People hate and say we changing, look, we made it. Yeah, we made it. Our episode 65 player dedication is Elvin Batea. He was a defensive end. He was born in Trenton, New Jersey in 1946. He went to high school at the local Trenton Central High School where he played football. He also partook in the shot put and discus track and field events. He went to play college ball at North Carolina A&T from 1964 to 67. He was drafted 77th overall in round 3 of the 1968 NFL draft by the Houston Oilers, and he would go on to play 16 seasons in Houston. He went to 8 Pro Bowls as an Oiler and was 5-time All-Pro. During his career, he played 210 games, including a fantastic stretch of 135 consecutive games, which included some time at guard as well as defensive end. He is in the Titans and Oilers Ring of Honor. Obviously, the Oilers became the Titans over time. He also has the Titans number 65 jersey retired, and he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2003. So, episode 65, player dedication, Elvin Batea, defensive end of the Houston Oilers, now Tennessee Titans. Let me ask you, is there anything better than watching football? Of course there is. Watching football with DraftKings, having a lineup on the line, especially this week, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at many cash prizes, millions of dollars, if you sign up with your first deposit using promo code PADDY, P-A-D-D-Y. Download the DraftKings app now. Use code PADDY, P-A-D-D-Y, for a limited time. Both new and existing users get a deposit bonus of up to $500. New users, don't forget, enter PADDY, P-A-D-D-Y, to get a free shot at over $1.5 million, both for the Thanksgiving games and also the Week 13 games this Sunday. So, PADDY, P-A-D-D-Y, at DraftKings.com. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. So today's guest on the Paddy Pigskin podcast is Connor Dropkick Mangan, and he is a potential pro kicker slash punter, and he comes from Cork, I believe, but he's in Toronto, Canada right now. So thanks very much for coming on, Connor. I hope it's not absolutely freezing up there, but it probably is the way it is here in Boston. So how are you?
Not too bad, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Just dropped there to about -4, -5 last night. Celsius, so
Chase, that's warm.
Chilly, all right.
it's when that wind chill kicks in, it really just absolutely slices through you, and it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually not that bad at all last night. Like, people are passing people on the street in the way to the gym, and they're like, oh, sure, it's a lovely evening outside.
So I'm sure you've seen over the years in your social media when
when a bit of snow hits the ground in Ireland, people lose their minds and start stocking up on the Brennan's bread, and we're like, shit keeps going here at 20 minus 25 minus 30 degrees in North America, like.
Exactly, yeah. I was there for the storm in 2006 when we had about 3 inches of snow up there in Cork, and it was absolute chaos. So
yeah, my first winter here was the really bad one in 2015, where we had 110 inches of snow, and nothing can prepare you for that. Like, even movies you see aren't as bad as what we saw that year. I don't think I'll ever get over the mental trauma of trying to walk through all the snow, you know, just to get home. Hopefully the record is never broken again. So I saw on your Kicking profile, yeah, and on your Instagram that you went to UCC. So I'm going to assume that you are, in fact, from Cork. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're dead right.
Okay, so what part of Cork are you from? Are you a city boy? Are you a country lad? Or what's the crack?
I'm a bit of a city boy, right? I moved around quite a bit, like, first 8 years of my life. I think we moved about six times.
Right.
We were in Ballincollig, and then we went actually up to Clare in a place called Clonmony.
Okay.
And then back down to Glenmire, and then ultimately settled in Glentawn. So I'm about 15 minutes outside the city there, in between kind of Middleton and the city.
Okay.
So fairly close.
Yeah, kind of like me, bit of a suburbs outside of Dublin sort of guy. Why Canada? Why Toronto? Was there any reason? Did you move? Was this a football decision, or?
Wasn't really a football decision. I was finishing up my Bachelor of Education there at UCC. I did sports studies and physical education. And I was kind of thinking about it. And one of my best friends there, Daniel Bagnall, he's from Carrigaline. He had said he'd worked in a summer camp out in British Columbia, in a place called Squamish, and he said he had the best summer of his life, and they keep wanting him to come back, and he doesn't want to go back by himself, but he'd definitely go back if I went back with him. He's a bit lonely that way, you know, these Cork lads, like, they just want a friend. So he was dead right, like, it's exactly like those summer camps you see in the movies.
Yeah,
as you're talking about there, the snow movies, like those summer camp movies. It's got its own private lake. You're up in the mountains. You know, you go through like bear and bobcat training, and like how to like properly put away food, how to set up fires, all this type of stuff. Like, it was an incredible experience. And so long story short, in order to get there for that, I had to get that IEC 2-year visa.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're aware of. And so I just didn't really want to waste a visa on 3 months up in the mountains.
Sure.
You know, a 2-year visa. So I basically decided to try and go to school and do a master's at the same time. And I ended up choosing Ottawa, which, believe it or not, is colder than Boston. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's it gets to minus 50 sometimes in the winter.
Is that on a lake? Is it by a lake or something as well, or it's just so far north?
It's not. It's actually in between Montreal and Toronto.
Ah.
And fun fact, it's the capital of Canada.
That's correct. Yeah. I'm a big capitals man, so people always people are like, oh, he's gonna say Toronto, or I'm like, no, it's in fact Ottawa, and then their heads explode when they find out it's not one of the major cities. So it gets pretty nippy up there, yeah.
It does. It's in a valley, so it can get, I think there's a different weather system that goes through that valley. It's off a river. But anyway, I decided to move there. I was doing a master's in human kinetics with concentration in sports management. So the goal was to kind of go down maybe professional coaching ultimately. And I applied for it and everything, did all my research while I was in my final year of teaching. And then I found out I had phone reception up a mountain somewhere in British Columbia at the end of August when I was just about to fly back over, that I hadn't been offered a position in the master's, and that I can reapply in January. So I was like kind of naturally upset, but I'd already actually started playing with a rugby team in Ottawa. I had signed up with them and I'd already gotten a job. So I just decided to kind of continue, and then the rest is kind of history.
Okay. So I get this question all the time, as an Irish man living in Boston, and I'm going to return the favor and ask you, what as an Irish man, you know, football is still a minority sport, as you know, back home. What got you into the game? Was it just a natural progression from living in North America and playing rugby, like you said, or did you always have a passion for the game before you moved over? Because before I moved here, like, I've been watching it probably, my dad would take me over to the local pub, we'd watch some of the Premier League and then maybe hang around for the 6 o'clock game, and he was a Jets fan, so naturally to piss him off, I became a Giants fan just to annoy him, you know. So just over the years, poor watching lads. It, yeah, exactly. We always go head to head. It's pretty funny. So I was always a fan of the game before I moved over here, and being a Giants fan in Boston always gets interesting. So did you love the game before you came over, or you just kind of picked it up once you were in Canada?
I was definitely a fan of the game. I have some extended family that lives in Ohio. And for some of the listeners, I guess you probably do know, Ohio State have an absolutely colossal football program in their university there, the Ohio State Buckeyes.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm a Buckeyes fan. So we just became best friends with that comment there.
Yeah, they're a huge, like, obviously, you know, like, the stadium seats 108,000 people. Like, it's just nothing like you'd see back home. Like, it's like Croke Park on steroids. Like, it's really absolutely insane. So I actually went to a game when I was like 12 years old, and I went to see it.
Oh, well.
It was obviously an amazing experience. And I decided to go back the year before I went to Canada. My sort of grandparents there were getting a little bit old, and they live in Ohio, and I thought it'd be a good time to see them. Mm-hmm. And went to a game in November, you know, it was absolutely freezing, but just loved it. And I was watching the kickers, and I was kind of like, this honestly looks very straightforward. Like, I don't know why there's so much pressure on them.
Yeah.
And I was like, everything is within these two hash marks that just looks like straight in front of the post. And I was like, I guess the only variable really is the guy holding the ball. But other than that, like, I guess if you practice,
it's grand.
This is probably going to be pretty easy. And I was a place kicker in rugby as well. Like, I played out half and full back and on the wing.
So compared to making conversions, which can be, you know, as you know, from the sideline, you're like, this is a piece of piss. You're right in front of the goalposts every time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can imagine in rugby, like, moving, it's almost like a scatter plot diagram where you take your kicks from. Yeah. But like football, you know where you're going to be taking your kicks from. It's probably going to be from, like, you know, the 15, 20 yard line all the way back to maybe like the 40, 45 yard line, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that much variables in terms of distance. So that was my kind of thought process. I thought it was easy. And then apparently it's not that easy. So
absolutely is not. No, they make it look easy though. The guys are, the pros are so polished, and they've gotten so many reps in over the years. Like, they make it look easier than it really is. Because when mere mortals, like, I'd be a way worse kicker than you would. Like, even when I try and step up, and like, I played in goals and soccer, so I would have been taking kickouts all the time. They really make it look easy. So you can be forgiven for thinking that it is an easy activity to be good at, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of notice right on the Irish kickers. I think kind of like a little bit that of what I'm hearing around, like a lot of the Australians are kind of getting noticed now. Yeah. But the big difference between a lot of the GAA players and soccer players, like, I personally think like Irish people would be the perfect NFL kicker. Like, the only issue is we constantly practice where we have tons of time and we're allowed to take as many steps as possible towards the ball.
Yeah.
There's no real time pressure in terms of accuracy. So like in GAA, you set up your 65 there, 45 or whatever, and you have loads of time to hit it and as many steps as you want. And it'd be same in soccer, like if you're taking a free kick or a penalty or something.
Yeah.
And the difference there in football is like it's less time, less kicks, and you have to be kind of just as powerful.
And there's big, massive human beings running at you trying to take your head off as well. So,
well, yeah, you've like, you know, five 300-pound linemen from Alabama who want to crush you like the bug you are from the island you've come from.
So actually what
I did was I loved that game, and then the coincidence was I moved to North America the year after, and I started playing rugby with a team there in Ottawa, and we won a championship that year up in a Montreal Irish rugby club, coincidentally enough. And it being Quebec, I actually got mad at the match that game, and they gave me a bottle of wine.
Most French thing ever, that is.
I know, yeah. I was laughing. And then I kind of got noticed by a provincial team out there. So there's only four provincial teams in Canada, like rugby teams, similar to Ireland. Like there's four provincial teams, and they'd be at the same standard in terms of it's the top level you can play at the country.
Yeah.
But obviously, Canada being as big as it is, only four is actually very small. Mm. But it was out in St. John's, and actually they had a head coach who used to be from Cork. He still got the thickest Cork accent you can possibly imagine. His name is Patrick Parfrey. And his sons actually went to Christiansburg College, same school that I went to, secondary school. Or not his sons, sorry, his cousins. So I think they'd be his brother's kids.
Okay.
But anyway, I actually got on that team and I started playing with that team. And everything was going well. I was being flown out back and forth, enjoying my rugby and playing with these big-ass Canadians and getting battered around the place. And
so were they flying you to St. John to play? Because unfortunately, I have bad memories of St. John, because flying home there one Christmas about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a medical emergency on the plane and we had to touch down in St. John's. I think we were on the ground for about 5 hours or so. And I was looking around going, this is in the middle of fucking nowhere out here. It's almost like last stop before you get to Ireland or Scandinavia or something. So were they were flying in for the games, were they?
Yeah, it's way out the edge there in the East Coast. Like, if you think Boston's on the East Coast,
oh, no way.
Take a look at a map and you'll see how far St. John's is out to the east. But yeah, they were like periodically they were flying me out there. Like, I'd be much closer to the Toronto team. Yeah. Obviously, being in Ottawa, I'm at like a 5 hour drive to the Toronto team. But St. John's would be like a 3 or 3.5 hour flight. So they flew me to Halifax and two other lads on the team I was playing with for a tryout. And there were about 82 people at this tryout. Like, it was kind of nuts. And it was like 2 days training. And, you know, Halifax weather is very similar to Ireland. So it was mucky and windy and wet. And,
yeah.
But it went really, really well. And then I flew out to St. John's for a week. And actually, Cork Con were there at the time. They were touring. So I played with them and against them with my team. Again, like 2 days training. But they had a former New Zealand back coach out there, like, training us. So it was like high quality stuff.
Mm.
It was an unreal experience. And then, yeah, I was kind of back and forth a bunch before we played in what's called a Canadian Rugby Championship, where all the four provinces play each other. And then, yeah, a week before I was about to play my first game, which coincidentally was going to be in Ottawa, I got a complaint against the commissioner saying I wasn't eligible for the 2015 World Cup for Canada. That I shouldn't be playing on a provincial team. And my coaches were pissed off. Like, we had an English coach there, Simon, who was excellent. And we actually had a former Leinster guy as well. Can't remember his name off the top of my head. But they were pissed. They were like, this isn't right. Like, we bring in these players to make our team better.
Mm.
Like, we shouldn't be penalized for it. So anyway, they had like a hearing on the Thursday and they're supposed to be playing on the Saturday. And decision came down Saturday morning saying, you can't play. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen this season. So, absolutely enough, I was pissed off. Like, I put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get paid for that. You kind of just get flown around and kind of get, you know, a couple of things kind of given to you, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So I just picked up a football and I said, this has got to be easier than going back and forth to St. John's and playing rugby. So that's how it kind of started, to be honest.
Okay. So you just picked up the ball, you're like, let's give this a shot and let's just see where it takes me.
Yeah, I went kicking in a dome because it was middle of winter when I picked up that ball. So kicked around in a dome for a while and I got like somewhat handy at it. And then a few Canadian football teams actually have open tryouts down in the States.
Mm.
So I went down to one for the Ottawa Redblacks, which was down in Princeton, New Jersey. It was very proper.
Oh, yeah. Fancy.
I went down to that one and I did pretty well. Like, there was four kickers and punters and I was definitely number two. The top guy was a little bit better than me, but I was kind of like, but for my first tryout out of four, I'm definitely the second best here.
Not bad.
I went 5 for 6 on field goals, kickoffs pretty well, and punted all right. The top guy was a little bit more consistent punter, but I was like delighted with myself after that. And then I kind of went hell for leather for it. I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do.
Fair enough. So I've seen, I did look at, if you want to give your documentary, Finding the Laces, a bit of a shout out there. I was looking at it on YouTube this morning and really enjoyed the mix of you know, football life with normal life, let's say, of another Irishman in North America trying to make it big and something that he loves. So do you want to explain a little bit about finding the laces and how that came about?
Yeah, so I was training away and I was going to a bunch of these tryouts and kind of like doing well and not really getting a whole lot of answers back. Like, I wasn't even getting spoken to be honest. And, you know, as an Irish guy, you kind of like we're very aware whether we play good or play bad. And like, we're our own best critics. Like, we're extraordinary talented as a race. So I was like, I'm not doing that bad. Like, I'm doing pretty well here. Why is like I'm not getting spoken to by coaches, not getting phone calls? So I decided, I was like, what if I just went off and kind of tried to get a bit of like of a social media presence or a little bit of traction in terms of doing something else, kind of following my story? Because I'd be at a pub, you know, and it's kind of like this. I'd start having a couple of drinks and someone would talk to me, and I'd end up telling the story, and they'd be like fascinated by the whole thing, you know, and I'd be rambling for hours. And I'd be like, all right, there's got to be something in this. So I decided to kind of self-produce this bit of a documentary video series on YouTube called Finding the Laces. So it kind of goes through, it's, you know, short 4 to 5 minute videos or episodes. There's 6 or 7 episodes in the first season. It goes through kind of my process in like what I'm doing right now in Canada, what my life is like, and then what free agency is like. So basically, I'm a free agent kicker and punter for the NFL and CFL and now the XFL. I'm able to be signed by any team. So what that looks like, what the training looks like, what it's like training in the winter and the cold, the challenges you kind of come up against. So it's all on YouTube there, and it's on Facebook. I've just finished the second season, and with any luck there'll be a third season come out, and it will be a happy ending.
Absolutely,
at the end of it, we'll see if there's a team at the end of that one. But so yeah, I kind of created that to hopefully get a bit of traction. It's not got as much traction as I'd want to, but it's something I'm kind of very proud of. Like, it's something I can always kind of go back to and see sort of my journey, that I've gone through, all the different places I've been, and kind of, you know, how hard it is and how good it is sometimes, you know?
Yeah. So, I really enjoyed it. It's very inspirational. So I'm going to get the links up, and people that are listening, especially people back home, will be interested to see, you know, an Irishman story trying to break through. So I'll make sure to get all the links up, because you are looking to be the first Irish born player in the NFL, correct?
Well, since
Irish-born kicker,
his name. It was a guy,
because we did have Pat Murray, who was like
a guy there actually. Yeah,
Pat Murray's parents were born in Dublin and Monaghan, I believe. But yeah, he was actually born on the East Coast. So I think
he's a Yank, right?
Yeah, he's a Yank. But in fairness, he actually did have a little bit of an accent, because when myself and my friend Barry, we went out, I think I was explaining to you during the week, we went down to Rockland GAA, just outside New York City.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
we went down there, and we showed up, and what I didn't know was that Pat had thrown me a curveball. He had arranged a meet and greet for all the kids in the club. So when we got there, I thought, you know, it might be just the barman or barwoman, Pat, and maybe his dad, because his dad is kind of on board with his team. And I thought there'd be a few of us, and no pressure at all. And then we show up there, and there's about 50 to 100 people, and they're all sitting there waiting on us to start. And I'm shitting myself, you know, because we're like, it's kind of still a small time podcast. I've done one or two live shows, but like, just the pressure of being in his clubhouse and all these people sitting there watching. And I was like, oh, here we go. But Pat had a bit of an Irish twang because of his mom and dad, and just a really nice
Jesus
guy.
Fast.
Yeah. But as you said, he was born in America, so he is technically an American, even though he does have 2 passports, I believe. So would you be, if you were to get a shot in the NFL, would you be the first born Irish kicker/punter to make it? Or is there something
missing
there?
I actually wouldn't be. There's a bit of a caveat there. My parents at the time were working in Ohio State. And I was me and my brother were born there. I lived there for 6 months, so I don't remember a thing.
Okay.
But yeah, born and raised there, I guess, for 6 months, and then moved down to Cork.
We'll claim you. That's 6 months is nothing. You couldn't even talk then. We'll definitely claim you as Irish. So
it got me the pass. passport, and that's all that matters.
That's so. Yeah. So you've been training with former NFL kicker John Carney, who had quite the career as a pro kicker, 24 years, yep. Which is, I mean, kickers obviously have a longer shelf life because they're not getting battered around, but 24 years, whatever way you look at it, is pretty impressive. And I don't know if you could say he's a journeyman or just he played for so many teams because he was around for so long, but he played for eight. So he was a Bengal, he was a Buccaneer, a Ram, he was with the Chargers when they were in San Diego, the Saints, who he won a Super Bowl with, the Jags, the Chiefs, and also my New York Giants. He was a Giant for 1 year. So
he was indeed. He loved it there.
Did he, yeah? So I'm interested to hear what it's like. What's it been like training with a legend at your position? Because he did win a Super Bowl, so he's got the ring. He's in the Saints Hall of Fame. Big fucking deal for some legendary players that have come from New Orleans or played for New Orleans. And he's also, this kind of surprised me actually when I looked it up, he's the Chargers, San Diego Chargers all-time leading scorer. Which I know some kickers can be, but then I didn't realise he actually played so long with the Chargers, which was like 10 or 11 seasons, was it?
Yeah, and he actually bought a Dodge Charger and had a license plate made up called Bolt Up.
For fuck's sake.
That's how much he loved the San Diego Chargers. And he still lives there with his wife.
Okay.
And he actually recently just moved. He was in the same house that he bought when he was playing with the Chargers.
Wow.
And raised his whole family there. But yeah. I would probably describe John Carney as almost like the Gandalf of the NFL. You kind of like when Frodo and the gang run into him, he's just like, you know, this humble old man in a pub, you know, not really bothering anyone.
Then,
you know, they slowly realize that he's like, you know, Gandalf the Grey. And I guess that's kind of like John Carney, like you run into him and kind of never guess of who he is, you know, 99 times out of 100.
Yeah.
He's incredibly humble. But if you listen to like the list of achievements you just read out there, like on top of that, he is one of like three or four players to play over four decades. He's the fifth highest point scorer of all time in the NFL.
Jesus.
So he's just like, I think he played till he was the oldest player selected for the Pro Bowl as well at 44. He's the all-time leading scorer, I think, for Notre Dame as well.
Wow.
So he's the Irishman for sure.
Yeah, big time.
And his ancestors come from Cork and Leitrim.
All right, so he probably took to you very nicely, did he then? Being a Cork man.
I met him by accident, to be honest. Like, I went out to California because there was a CFL tryout there that you could just attend, and there was, now you had to pay for it and everything. But there was three teams there, and I thought, you know, it's triple the trouble. You can kind of get a bit of extra exposure there.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm not going to California for the weekend, so I'll go out there for the week and kind of kick a couple of times, and was looking up for some coaches and kind of found him by accident and ran into him. And we went to the gym first. He has an actual gym there before you go to the kicking field. And I jumped into his car on the way to the field. And he starts getting phone calls from this guy, Drew Ferris. And Drew Ferris was a long snapper, and he was going to join us along with a bunch of other guys. And Drew had actually just been signed by the Seattle Seahawks that previous Saturday.
Wow.
And I was kind of like sitting in the car like
holy
what's
shit.
Going on?
So he just wanted reps in, I guess, did he, before heading up to Seattle? Is that what he was looking for?
Yeah, and it was actually raining at the time, and he wasn't going to come out because it was raining, and he's a California kid.
Does he know what happens in Seattle? It fucking rains all the time up in Seattle. You need to get used to it.
And that's what John said. John was like, I don't know if you know it, Drew, but it tends, like, it has rained before in Seattle, you know, like, let alone coming out now, we should have a hose on you for the rest of the week. So, it was, and then he says to me, he goes, well, Blair Walsh might come up tomorrow.
Jesus.
And I was like, what? Yeah, and Blair Walsh at the time had actually, he was still with the Minnesota Vikings, and he had just missed that field goal to win the game against Seattle Seahawks, and like, I think it was the NFC or AFC championship, whatever one it was, I can't recall exactly.
Yeah,
but you
remember
that field goal, it was cold, and he was given laces, missed.
Yeah.
And yeah, like sure enough, Blair Walsh came down the next day, kicked for the next 2 days with us. And I was kind of just like, geez, this is the place to be. You've got like the highest quality talent here.
Yeah.
And then you've got like Gandalf teaching us on top of everything else.
So clearly, so like, clearly he's so well respected that these people are heading down to his kicking factory, if you will, to train with him. You know, he has just the infinite wisdom in kicking that all these players from everywhere are coming to him.
Yeah, he has this like just this dream of like having his so his business, I guess, or his program is called Kearney Training Facility. And he just has this dream of being able to help these guys out because he knows the grind. Like, he knows how tough it is to get where he was. Like, first 2 or 3 years out of college, he didn't get signed by a team.
Wow.
And if you talk about it in his own words, he's like, I just kind of got pissed off. And I was like, all right, well, if I'm not going to make it, it's not going to be because of lack of effort. And he just started hitting the gym like crazy and just started really getting himself in serious athletic condition, really, really flexible. And then sure enough, he got picked up by the Chargers and was there for like 10 or 11 years.
Yeah.
So unreal. He just has this mindset, and then obviously, yeah, everyone he's been through and been with know how good he is. I mean, like, he's like Adam Vinatieri is like texting him all the time, like Thomas Morstead, like Will Lutz.
Jesus.
Aldrich Rosas, speaking of your New York Giants, Aldrich Rosas trained out with him.
I was gonna say
I was training with him last year. So
I was gonna say I saw when I say research, I mean stalking your Instagram profile. I saw that Aldrich Rosas was there, and he had a rough start of the year after going to the Pro Bowl there 1 or 2 years ago, where he just couldn't miss.
Yeah,
he's only missed, I think he's because he didn't miss the other night against the Eagles, so I think he's like 12 or 15 now or something like that. So he just had one bad game, I believe, against Detroit, I think it might have been, where he missed one or two, but he seems to have steadied the ship a little bit. But so he was that the Giants connection there, because Kearney was a Giant at one stage, or just he knew that Gandalf is down there in San Diego, so I'm going to go train with him. Is that just like just the...
I'm actually not sure exactly how they linked up. John does tend to go after a few college guys when they're in their senior year, and he has a bunch of college connections because he knows a lot of the coaches there.
Right, right.
And they might send him on to him. Aldrich is actually a very quiet guy. Like, he's very, very humble. I know if you're next to him, he's like 6'2", 6'3", built like a brick shithouse.
He is a big lad for a kicker, all right. Yeah, he's wide, like...
Yeah, he looks like a tight end. He's an absolute machine. He wouldn't really say much to you. He gets in there, does his business, works hard. He's actually a little bit goofy when he kind of relaxes. Like, he's kind of a funny guy. I'm not sure exactly what the connection with John is, but like, you'd be with John sometimes and, you know, he gets a call from like the Chicago Bears GM, for example. You know, you just never know who's going to be calling his phone.
I'm going to guess and say that was after the double doink against the Eagles, was it? His phone was probably blown off the hook from the Bears.
There was that moment, all right, when they were a little bit panicked and they might still be. And actually, John referred on one of his kickers there, Redford Jones. And then Redford got signed, 2 weeks later. So he's kind of the guy to get you to a point where you compete, and he's always talking about, you know, like, you have to be ready for your phone call. You've got to keep yourself fresh. It can happen at any point. Like, I've lost track about the amount of guys that have gone through there that are like outstandingly talented, and it's just such a patience game. And, you know, you don't know where you stand with a lot of these teams. Like, everything is like the best kept secret, and then they just pack it in and they just quit, and they're honestly like so close to getting picked. It's unreal. Like, John might get a call from a team like 2 or 3 weeks later, or your agent might get a call and they just say, no, he's packed it in, he's not around anymore. It's just a long waiting game for kickers and punters. You know, there's nothing like it in pro sports. It's the strangest sort of position, and probably the most cutthroat position there is.
Yeah. So like John said, just have your phone on. Never let that battery on your iPhone 11 or whatever it is you have go dead. You always have to be ready for the phone call. So did your, I was looking at in some of the videos you had on Finding the Laces, I was looking at some of your numbers, which were very, very impressive. You had a couple of punts there in the 54, 50 yard, 55 yard range. So did you notice, what were your kind of numbers before you went to see John, and how much of an increase in, you know, length and even accuracy as well, did you see after working out with John?
It all definitely improves. It's a whole pile of different factors, but like, ultimately it comes down to having like perfect technique. Like, not to quote our favorite fighter there, Conor McGregor, but like precision beats power and timing beats speed. Like, right. with everything. Like, if you're talking to any golfer, they'll tell you that John Daly isn't the best golfer. but John Daly can absolutely smoke a ball.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I guess my numbers have improved a good bit. Like when I got out there first, my punt was like a rugby punt. Like my foot was stepping out to the side and I was kind of trying to come across the ball in order to force it to spiral and things like that. My steps were off. My timing was off. I couldn't catch a snap basically because then they break my fingers.
Yeah.
Because they snapped the ball really, really fast.
Mm.
So yeah, like through that and through watching all the guys, it's gotten a lot better. So now I'm able to, you know, like hang time matters a lot with punting. So
yeah,
I'm able to get that 5-0 hang, which is that kind of elite hang.
Yeah.
And then distance would probably be my better thing. Like that was the thing from taken from rugby and soccer and everything else I learned back home. Like I was able to crank the ball a good distance, but not with a whole lot of hang time. Like I was able to just like drill it down the field, which is what I'd be used to doing in rugby.
Yeah.
And then field goals, you know, I was often able to hit like a rugby ball over from the halfway. That was kind of a thing I was really good at. But again, you have as much time as you want and you can kind of take a couple of extra steps. Whereas in football, when I took that there, I was like, it was just creeping over the bar from 50, which would be, you know, not as good. So that slowly crept up. So now I'm at like, you know, I can put the ball over from 60 from a field goal.
Wow.
You know, punting, depends what type of punt you want. Basically, it changes from team to tryout to coach, whatever you want to do. But yeah, like I could probably hit, you know, anything around like 50, 55 yards, want me to, like up to 4.8, 4.9 hang, something like that. So yeah, numbers have gone up. It's just a constant getting better, you know.
Yeah, each day just a small bit better, just like a 1% increase, you know, over time. Yeah. Is going to be a huge change. And like you mentioned, how the hang time is so important. Like I don't think a lot of people don't realize that the 40 yard dash was kind of brought into the game because it was to see how quick a guy could get downfield after a punt. And that's why, yeah, if he can get there in 4.5 or 4.6 or whatever, and your punter has put 5 seconds on it, that's enough time for him to settle, realise that the guy is catching it, and then lay the hit as soon as he catches it. So getting up there in the 5 is so important, especially if you have gunners who are running 4.2, 4.3. They can really break down and make the tackle. So getting the height on the ball is so important. And I was just looking at some of the advanced metrics of currently in the NFL just to see how your numbers would shape up. So like, the longest average right now is Tress Way for the Washington Pro Football Team. He's 49.4 yards. That's net. The average punt, yep, the average net from what I saw was about 41 yards. Longest net average was Matt Wiley for the Lions. He's 48.3. And then the shortest is Ryan Allen, who the Patriots released. He's with the Falcons now at 35.2. Yep. So there is a bit of a big spread there. And you just said you made him from 61. Brett Maher, who just got cut there a week or two ago by the Cowboys, he's made the longest one this year of 63. So if you're only 2 yards off from the longest field goal made this year in the NFL, so do you, looking at your numbers there, and do you feel that your numbers could definitely be falling in line with some of the best in the game in the NFL?
I think it could. I mean, I think it depends. To kind of get into a little bit like Brett Maher actually used to kick with the Ottawa Redblacks. I used to watch him like every week because I used to live there. So, and I knew where he's from. He's from Nebraska. He was a good kicker. And then I was actually at a tryout with him like 2 years after that in Arizona. And there was him. There was Young Wei Koo, who just got signed by the Falcons.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of different punters. Like I think Ty Long might have been there. He now punts for the Chargers. And those guys were all competing, and you had all these NFL teams behind them. Like I think my numbers do stack up. It just depends. Like I'd be more suited, right, for I think a windy or a cold city for my punts. Mm. Like I wouldn't be hitting 5-0s for every single ball. I'm more of a guy who can kind of direct it into the corner and hit you a 4-6 or a 4-7, like outside the numbers.
So that's something I've always wondered. Like now that you have the rugby background and you have a lot of the Aussies as well, who would probably be a little bit better at directional kicking. Like I watch so much football and I watch obviously a lot of special teams as well. And I'm just like, especially when the returner is so dangerous, like, you know, the Bears have always seemed to be lucky with returners. Like they have Tariq Cohen, who's shifty, but they always had They've got Cordell Patterson as well. And of course, they got Devin Hester. But like, when guys are that dangerous on the other end, like, why aren't you just kick for touch or something, you know? Find a spot on the sideline and fucking keep the ball away from that guy. But you'd never really see it. Like, why is that? Is it just because it's so difficult, or it's like they'd rather keep the ball in play? Maybe he muffs it, maybe he fumbles it. Or there has to be a reason why guys aren't just like, keep it away from the danger man and kick for touch.
Well, there's probably two different reasons, right? And this is just my theory before anyone absolutely grills me. But they're being told to hit a certain kick by their coaches.
Yeah.
Right. This is what we want. This is what we want this game. We know he's back there, but this is what we want. So they might just drill it long and drill it high or whatever they do straight into his mitt. Or it's the fact that, and I think there's a little bit of a scouting issue sometimes with punters, is a lot of them, because there's so much focus on the big ball, there's so much focus on hitting like a 50-yarder from the line of scrimmage now. So that's actually like a 61-yarder. So it's 50-yarder with like 5-0 hang time. There is like so much emphasis on having a big leg that a lot of these guys literally can just crank the ball, but cannot put it right or left depending on what they're doing, you know? So a lot of them can just absolutely smash it and actually can't direct it. Like guys like Thomas Morstead now for the Saints, he can put the ball wherever you want. Like Johnny Hecker can put the ball wherever you want. The Ravens guy, Sam Cooch, he's unreal at doing it. He can put the ball wherever you want.
And I saw in your videos, you had a couple of videos where you're putting it left and right, and you seem to be able to put it left and right and also maintain the hang and the distance. So it doesn't really seem, but that probably stems from a bit of rugby, right? Because you're like, okay, I'm going to boot it down here.
Well, it does, maybe like, I think that comes a little bit easier to me, but like John Carney, for example, always puts focus on that. And the previous coach I worked with, Sam Watts, always did as well. Like you kind of put out boxes for yourself between the sideline and the numbers, and you try and land it into the box every time. Because like the great special teams coaches want you to put the ball outside the numbers and want to make it for like these unbelievable returners who are like literally some of the best athletes on the planet. Like that's who you're kicking the ball against. Like guys who are not afraid to get absolutely smashed by someone who weighs 300 pounds, but they can run like a 4.2 with pads.
Yeah.
Like that's who you're kicking the ball into. So like I think obviously I'd rather put the ball 43 yards high in the air, like outside the numbers, then absolutely crank it like 60 and give the guy, you know, 20 or 25 yards of space running at me.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it makes complete sense. Like these are, you know, why make it easy for the guys? They're so dangerous when they have the ball in their hand. By punting it right down the middle, you're kind of just making it. It's like an easy left or right choice where if you kind of put them in the corner a little bit, you know, they got to go right, really. Yeah. And they're going to get blown up.
It being America and it them like loving everything big.
If the ball's
straight down the middle is a 52-yarder or 5-1 hang, then like that's the stat they actually look at the end of the day. You know, oh, what are my stats?
Sure.
Oh yeah, you great stats. You were 48 gross average. With da, 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 da. And he's like, oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
He goes, God, they run it back. They ran it back for a touchdown on that big punt. But that's your special teams balls. You know, like it's kind of
statistics
can kind of play any way you want. Like you talk about those advanced metrics.
Yeah,
you can probably make advanced metrics do anything you want it to do if you look at it in a certain light.
Trust me, as a scientist who deals with data every day, you can spin a story any way you want with numbers at your disposal, you know? So just directional kicking just doesn't seem to be a big requirement amongst these guys. Which, do you reckon,
I'll give you an example. I was at a big free agent tryout is on in Arizona every year in March. And this is the one that Brett Maher got signed from like last year. A bunch of guys who were all in free agency getting picked up there, like Sam Ficken would have been there, your Jets guy. And he trains a lot with John. They're all in this tryout in March, and you have to go through, usually if you're not on it, if you haven't been on a team before, you have to go through a qualifying process. So I was in the qualifying last year, and there was a bit of a breeze in our face, which is unusual for Scottsdale, Arizona. If you've ever been there, it's virtually the desert.
Exactly.
But it actually there was a bit of a breeze that day in her face, and then it rained the day after. So obviously someone was cooking up something, some witch somewhere. But yeah, like we're punting away. We had 4 punts right, 4 punts left, and that's what we were supposed to do. And a bit of a breeze in her face, so I hit a lower ball. I think my average hang was around like a 4 or 5. But I had a 48-yard average. Like, I had a bunch of 55, 56-yard punts all outside the numbers. And I didn't qualify because, unbeknownst to me, at the end, he kind of brought people up one by one, the guy running it. And he was like, you had to have a 4.7 or higher. And I was like, but there's a wind in our face. And he's like, well, all these other kickers, like, he pointed out a few punters, sorry, that that punted in 4.7s or higher. And they were averaging like 33 yards, you know.
Jeez.
So if you're averaging that, you're basically getting cut. Like, if you average that for two games, if you average 33 yards for two games, you're going to probably get cut.
Yeah.
So, like, there's certain kind of scouting issues that I find, like, there's way too much emphasis on either a hang time or a big ball. And I told him, I was like, look, like, six out of my eight punts were all outside the numbers.
Yeah.
And I'd miss it one. And he was, and I was like, they're all outside the numbers. And, like, you know, they're going pretty far in a windy stadium. I was like, if that was Chicago, or if that was New York anytime from, you know, late October on, or if that was even in, like, Detroit or somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great average.
You're causing mayhem.
Jump at that. Or,
yeah, that's mayhem there in the return game.
Exactly, or any CFL team, but he just, like, you know, he just said, "Well, I have you down to the firm." No,
they're just so hell bent on that one kind of metric. They don't give a fuck about the rest, really, which is unfortunate.
They were told the year before that NFL teams wanted punters with more hang time, and that was disclosed to us until after the workout. So,
Jesus,
and sometimes that's just the way it happens. So, I mean, like, it's. I thought I performed well, but, like, that's just the way it goes sometimes. So that's what a lot of the times you have guys who look like they're just crushing the ball downfield because that's exactly what they're told to do.
Yeah, they're just following orders. So what's the plan now? Because we're going to be in a couple of, how many weeks away? In about, I guess, 7 or 8 weeks, the NFL season is going to be over. So what's the plan over the off season? Are you going to try and get your name out there so you can maybe latch on to, you know, and the rosters expand again to 90 something players in the off season before hitting the training camp? So you going to be working with John again? Maybe John can get you in touch with a few teams to take a look at you, or what's the plan going forward?
Well, the plan is, you know, as I'm expecting, all 32 NFL teams are going to be listening to this podcast. The special teams coaches and the scouts. So you have my number, 613-266.
Well, I have met Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick before, so I might slide through his DMs there and give him a shout and see if, because they're having a bit of kicking trouble at the moment. So
yeah. So the plan is, what I've done the last couple of years, and it's kind of been a little bit stressful, but I've actually taken the winter off work and driven out to California, me and the dog.
Jesus.
Packed up the car and just moved out there to train, because that's, like, as you just said, like, NFL season ends in 6 or 7 weeks, but teams are starting to look now. Like, there's I don't know how many teams are eliminated, probably, like, is there, like, about 12 teams eliminated from the playoffs already?
I think in the NFC,
like, all those teams are already so they're already looking for kickers. Like, there's the Red Blacks current kicker Lewis Ward, who made 67 field goals in a row. He's got, like, four NFL tryouts this week. So that'll kind of show you what they're looking towards next year. So anyway, I'll be driving out there. As we discussed beforehand there, my brother lives in San Francisco, so heading out to him for Christmas.
Nice.
And then it's basically knuckle down time. It's training from January to that same big workout in March that I'll be doing with. So I'll be training with John all the time. And then there's another big workout on in Mobile, Alabama. Sort of the arsehole of the States, but it happens to be where the Senior Bowl is on. So there happens to be a lot of teams down there, all in the area. So a former kicker for Tampa Bay there, Pat Murray might know him.
Yeah.
Michael Huestad runs this big football combine on there. So you can get some exposure down that way. But
yeah,
it's just a case of, like, constantly producing more content in terms of YouTube videos and showing people what I can do in Instagram, and trying to get some sort of traction out there. Because honestly, the biggest thing is that I didn't play college football.
Yeah.
And all these guys being, like, stats heavy as they possibly can be.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to find a guy. The scout wants to find a guy. And then the scout's got to bring it to his head and say, like, this is the guy. This is how good he was. This is his history. Look how good he was in college. And then that head brings it to, like, a special teams guy. And he says the same thing to the special teams guy. Oh, this guy was in college, but look how good he did at this tryout as well. And with me, there's no extra line that way. So that's what I'm kind of trying to get over. Last year, I worked out with a few Canadian football teams. And, you know, a lot of them are funny. I don't know if you've ever had this experience in Boston, probably not in Boston, but I've had them come up to me before and they're like, so where did you kick? And I'll tell them I was a rugby player from Ireland. They're like, I'm a rugby player. And they'll be kind of like, oh, so you're from Australia. And I'm like, no, I'm not from Australia.
Yeah.
They kind of can't distinguish the accent.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, like I was working out for Calgary actually. And he took me aside in the middle of the workout and he was kind of asking me where I lived, if they need to fly me out or whatever else. And I was kind of like, no, I live in Toronto, but I'm actually not Australian. And he goes, oh, no, I know who you are. And that's kind of the first time that's happened where they've known exactly who I was. They'd seen me before somewhere. I don't know where. So like, that's kind of what I need to do. So you can perform well at one workout.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really matter. It's got to be kind of four or five in a row in the space of like 2 or 3 years in order to like keep you in their mind that like, oh, hey, this guy is very consistent, talented. Yeah. No matter where he went to college, half these guys haven't kicked in college in the last 3 or 4 years anyway. So,
yeah. So it's just about putting a few consistent performances together to kind of keep that name fresh in the head.
Exactly.
Fair enough. Well, I wish you all the best with it. I'm rooting for you. And I'm sure now that there's going to be a lot of listeners on this podcast that are going to start following your journey as well, which is fantastic. And before we go, I have seen that you are a big MMA fan, like myself.
Yep.
And of course, there's a fucking huge card this weekend, in Las Vegas. So I'm going to ask you for just the three title fights. We're not going to go through the whole card because... I guess with the prelims and all, I think there's about 15 fights or something like that. So we'll go through the three title fights. So we'll start with ladies first. Amanda Nunes versus GDR. Who have you got on this one?
Shouldn't even be a conversation. Got to be Amanda Nunes.
Fair enough.
Ever since she walked through Cyborg's punches and knocked her out the first round, I might add.
Yeah.
Like no one should be betting anywhere
exactly.
different.
And considering GDR actually avoided Cyborg and basically like stepped away from the belt, and that left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth as well. Yeah, I'm going with Nunes there. We got Max Blessed Holloway against Alexander the Great Volkanovski. Who have we got in this one?
I don't know. You know, I'm a rugby fan, so I'm kind of torn a little bit now. Hawaii is a nice place to visit, but like Volkanovski used to be, you know, he wasn't an Australian player, but he played with a pro team, right?
Really? Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Volkanovski used to be a rugby player, rugby league, I think. He used to be a bit like 210 pounds when he's playing or something like that.
Fuck.
And now he's 155.
Jesus,
that's crazy. Yeah, I'm not sure to be honest, because I like him. I would not like to be fighting him if I was Max Holloway, because he looks really dangerous.
Mm.
But Max Holloway is sort of really proven now. He lost his last fight at 155, wasn't it? Didn't he lose that one? I think. Or did he? Was his last fight at 145?
Well, he had Ortega, which he won against Ortega. Has he lost the belt? Because he's only one belt at the moment, isn't he?
But he went. Yeah, he went up to 155, and I think he might have lost. I don't know.
You could be right there.
If Volkanovski is the underdog, I'd bet on him. But
Dustin Poirier beat him. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. If I was just picking a winner, I wouldn't go against him. I'd go Max Holloway as well.
Yeah, I got Holloway. Just he's a fucking cardio machine, and he can walk through so much punishment. I just feel if he. Because Volkanovski, I guess, hasn't been in a five-rounder before, so it'd be interesting to see if the cardio holds up. Max is kind of like Diaz. He's known for taking lads into the deep waters in the fourth and fifth round and just drowning them. So I'm going to take Max Holloway there as well. And then this is a proper beef going on here, and this is a proper grudge match. It is Usman against Colby Covington. So who have we got on this one?
America's sweetheart, Colby Covington. I don't know. He's like, you've talked about guys with an engine. Like, Colby Covington is just like, every time I watch him fight. Now, I think I've only watched the last two or three, and I didn't really watch him before that. But you don't really expect he's just going to come out like ferocious and then just like constantly be ferocious. Like, I've never seen someone
do it
the way he does it. Oh my God, it's just like
through the roof.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I don't know whether he like has an elliptical at home that he's on just like 23 hours a day, but like his cardio is just absolutely insane. And then Usman hasn't fought in a while, so I don't know. I'd bit of a toss up. I'll probably take Usman though, just because I don't know. Colby's a little bit cocky.
Yeah.
He's always cocky and he always backs it up, but I put Usman just in terms of like he seems to be the quieter guy and you're always afraid about that.
Yeah. Okay.
The loud mouth. So
I'll go with the loud mouth just so we're not agreeing on every fight. But I do have a funny feeling this is gonna finish because there's so much bad blood between these two lads now. You know, when guys get, as Conor said, when you get emotionally invested, you make rash decisions, as we saw with Jose Aldo when he got sparked in 14 seconds. He got way too emotionally invested in the build-up. So I just feel, you know, it's kind of like the red rag to a bull that once they're in there facing each other, one of them might get a bit sloppy and get caught. So I'm going to go with Colby. You know, a side of me fucking hates the way he goes on, but then the other side is like he's kind of smart with it as well. He knows he's roiling people up and he loves it, you know? So I have to respect that because he is a bit of a showman. So I'm going to go with Covington in that one.
Put that on, or do you think it's all like face value, or do you think he kind of puts a lot of that on?
I don't know. Just from having been around Conor once or twice on nights out, like just having seen what he's like when the cameras get switched off, you know? This was before he let everything go to his head. Like he was kind of just a normal dude behind the scenes, and it was, as soon as that red light on the camera goes on, though, the personality shows up. So, I don't know. I'd have to kind of see what Colby is like when the cameras aren't on and he hasn't got the audience in front of him just to see. But he's selling the fight pretty well. I'll give him that.
Yeah, for sure.
Roy, I've held you long enough. Thanks very much for coming on, Conor. I really appreciate your time and wish you all the best. I really hope that one of those teams, whether it be NFL, CFL, or even who knows now with the XFL setting up in February. I really hope you get that phone call and you follow your dreams.
So. Yeah, there's a bunch of lads now are getting picked up by the XFL. It seems to be a bit of a buzz around it. So I'm really excited to start watching it.
Yeah.
It's Vince McMahon, so anything can happen.
Exactly, yeah.
Before I'm just waiting to see him try and put tables, ladders, and chairs somehow in the end zone or something like that.
Well,
get a couple of power bombs going.
Well, they need a team in Buffalo if they wanted to do that because they're always fucking power bombing each other through tables. Do you want to give shout out there about your social media and also finding the laces just in case people have forgotten?
Yeah, so Instagram is Dropkick Mangan, which was christened to me by Jason Ellis, if anyone knows who that is. And Twitter is Dropkick Mangan. You can follow me there. On Facebook, it's Finding the Laces. So you'll see all the videos on there. Or YouTube, if you YouTube Finding the Laces Season 1 or Conor Mangan or NFL Free Kicker, you should be able to find it. Have a listen. And then also John Kearney, for anyone who's training there out in California, he runs the Ultimate Specialist Camp. They go to an Olympic training center for the rugby team, actually, out in San Diego. You get weight training. You get taught how to lift and do proper technique, and then how to kick and punt with pro staff. In the past, they've had NFL kickers and Super Bowl winners train you. So that's on like first week of January, if anyone's out there. Yeah, and that's about it. Thanks very much, Gary. Really appreciate you having me on.
No worries, Conor. Thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate your time.
All right. Go Giants!
That'll do it for episode 65 of Paddy Pigskin. Had a fantastic, really enjoyable chat with Conor Dropkick Mangan. I wish him all the best in his journey, and I really hope that he does break through into pro football as a kicker and punter. So from Paddy Pigskin, wish him all the best. And as always, keep your eyes peeled on the social media pages. Appreciate all the support there. I have a shitload of stuff to give away for Christmas, thanks to our sponsors, DraftKings, and one or two other bits and pieces as well. So keep your eye on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for any contest announcements there. And wherever you're listening to us, all the podcast apps, appreciate your support. Feel free to give us a review.
And feel free to let your mates know that you enjoy our podcast. Get them to subscribe. So tune in next time where, as always, we will have less slant and more slantcha. Take care. Climbing up the top sails, I lost my